This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Hey, everybody, this is Adam Shartoff, host of FilmWax Radio, the independent cinema chat show. That's what I do. I talk about independent cinema with today's youngest and brightest, and also the most venerable and the dimmest as well. I don't care. You know what? But if you love cinema and you're doing something in that world, you might be on the show. You just might be. My guest today is Theodore Kalatos, or also known as Teddy Kalatos. Teddy has a number of films under his belt. He's done some very, very edgy films. Not like, you know, okay, I'm going to be an edgy type of filmmaker, but, you know, edgy because he's trying to do things that are, you know, provocative, but more because that's what excites him, you know? So I've seen some shorts of his that have blown me away. Anyway, he has made a feature film. It's on, just happens to be on Fandor, which reminds me, actually, I did have him on a couple months ago on episode 215. So if you want to check that out, he is on that episode. But this is now a full jam-packed, long-form conversation. And in fact, I would say the crux of this conversation, in a way, is when we talked about Frederick Wiseman. This is a filmmaker that I mean, I've known Teddy now for a few years, and we've talked about film a lot, and I never knew that he had a deep, passionate love for the documentaries of Frederick Wiseman. But I did see a documentary that Teddy made a couple of years ago called, I think it was called Move, about a dance company. So it was very much about watching a dance company. And I suppose maybe this was somehow influenced, possibly. So this show is a little bit also of a nod to Wiseman, who has, by the way, a new film coming out called The National Gallery, which is another one of his institutional documentaries. So we'll be looking out for that soon, and hopefully even talking to Frederick Wiseman on this very show. In the meantime, though, I'm very, very excited to say that you are going to hear a fun conversation over several glasses of vino with my friend Teddy Kalatos. And by the way, if you're in the Brooklyn section of America and you get a chance on Monday, I think it is the 20th of October, Teddy will be screening his film Dipso at Videology in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. And I will be there. And I think I'm going to do the Q&A with him. So there is that option. If you live nearby, come and check it out. I believe it's a free screening. So you'll want to check that out. And here now is my conversation with Mr. Kalatos.
You ever hear of functional drunks? I mean, that's what we've all been good at, but you're giving a whole new meaning to that. There's no function there. You're just drunk.
I need to function in some sleep. I think I'll pull that off nicely.
Listen, when you fucking die, you'll get enough sleep then.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's a cousin of death.
No, I want to get enough practice in before then.
Listen, this whole thing, it doesn't mean shit. The only thing that matters is us just getting up and going. That's all.
Look,
that's all I want
to
do.
I'm trying to be disrespectful. I'm fucking goddamn wasted, man. I just want to fucking take a shower. I'll come by later.
You know the majority of the stuff gets done in the morning. These people that hire us to do these things, they need to see us there.
Yeah, maybe I'll call my probation officer for a fucking ride, too.
I'd like to get into that rhythm where you just make films one a year.
Everybody, I think a lot of filmmakers do. Not every, but a lot of them do. They want to, you know, it's not like about being so
precious.
Precious, exactly.
Well, it's so available that, you know, there's less spent kind of preparing almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's still hard, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of flux also in the industry, and, you know, it's a matter of also how do you calibrate with that, and how do you, you know, like if you want to put out a lot of stuff, but so how are you going to get it out?
I mean,
so there's not only the pre-production aspects of it, and how do you get it all together to make things happen, and how do you get all your ducks in a row, but also then once you have that, where is it going to go? How are people going to see it?
Yeah, I mean... I've recently just broken through to a whole other consciousness with this because the more I think like that, the more I just don't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But recently I've just broken through to the point of the purity of just making it and enjoying that process. And mm-hmm. on a certain level, it can be done for nothing. So if you can keep mm-hmm. along those lines and just do things for the purity of doing it, I know it sounds idealistic and stupid, but it's almost impossible to have a career in film. So if you twist your head around trying to have a career in film, you might just twist your head off. But,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I got to a point where I was like, I just either going to stop or just enjoy it and not worry about getting it out there at all. Mm-hmm. I know that's ridiculous, but.
Right. Well, and then it's less calculated. Then you really are making films that are, you know, from a very authentic place, you know, and then what happens is because people are going to respond to it at the end of the day,
yeah.
even if it takes however long to get it out there.
Well, I mean, there's so many films, there's so many amazing films. I mean, I'm like overwhelmed by how good people are these days. And,
mm-hmm.
That's just feeding into even that can like, kill you.
Like what comes to mind when you say that?
Oh, God. There's just so many.
That you've seen lately that I might want to check out or see put on my radar?
Well, there's this one film, Three People I've Never Heard Of by David Rosfeld. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I did. How did I know about it? Oh, I think we just met somewhere, and
it's
he invited me to his, and I really had no expectations. Yeah.
It's like one take. I mean,
it's incredible.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it was remarkable that it was hinged on this technical, you know, a bit of a stunt in a way, but that it had a real successful emotional
center
to it. Exactly. Yeah, I liked it a lot. When it was over, I was like,
it takes courage to ride that tightrope.
Yeah, and he really made a case for it. He said, you know, I'd really rather not give you a link, but come over and see it. And I don't think I would have appreciated it if I hadn't done it that way.
Yeah, that's another one that's better projected, big.
Yeah, and you need to be locked in a room and not...
locked in a room?
We were locked in. No, but you can't watch that in parts because that ruins the whole idea. If anything shot like in one take, you would need to see it in one take.
Yeah.
Also.
He did a short, too, that is not one take. That's pretty cool.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I felt bad because David Rosfield, because I had him on the show with Patrick Wang. Do you know Patrick's work?
Yeah.
I lost the show. I had them two of them on. Like, I like to occasionally get two filmmakers together.
Uh-huh.
And just sort of chat about navigating their careers, and they can bounce off each other in that way.
Yeah, Patrick has an interesting story.
Yeah, but I lost it. I don't know what happened to the file. I felt terrible. I had to tell them both, and bad. So I need to get them both on. And Patrick has a new project, so
David
had a really hard time with that film.
It's tough. I mean,
but he's had a really particular. I don't know why even, but it's been for whatever reason. It's not been.
I don't know. It's kind of like my film. It's divisive.
Mm-hmm.
But we're working on a project together. He's producing a documentary.
Oh, okay.
So,
anything else you've seen?
I mean, Joanna Arnau's film was amazing. I mean, Nathan Silver's films are amazing. Mm-hmm. There's just so many. I mean, short films that are just done in a 5D, but just look ridiculous with lenses and dolly moves and mm-hmm. just... but, I mean, that's not the point, you know? Like, it's strange because it's so easy to make things look amazing, but there's not a lot of things like Joanna's film that... It's not about the look. It's about that it kicks your ass and it's awesome. You know, I don't.
Well, it seems like you in particular, though, respond to a level of rawness.
Yeah,
in
I
films.
Like a punch in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that film. You know, I hate myself. Smiley face. that's on your main, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that is, and there's a lot of genitals on. Display.
There's not as much as people
there
say.
There are several penises in various...
There's one tip at one point.
No.
That's all I would acknowledge.
No, there were
tip.
Several penises and on various levels of stiffness.
Right, but just for, you know, a glancing second.
It was enough.
Well, it wasn't the zone, so...
Yeah, that was hard.
Okay.
No, that was difficult for me to watch, too, because I... You know,
yeah,
that was Larry, right?
Yeah, The Paradise Love, which is another punch in the face movie that I loved.
What is, I have one of their films on. His films also on.
Oh my god, he is the best right now.
List to see.
I'm in love with him. He's just a badass.
Mm-hmm. One of his earlier films.
Import Export or.
Love that film. That's a great film.
Dog Days.
I don't know if I saw that one, but Import Export is really good. Have you seen it?
He's just got a great style going.
Yeah.
So perfectly.
What was Dog Days about?
I mean, it's a similar thing, I think. It was just observational, mm-hmm. but bizarre of kind of home life kind of things. Mm-hmm. But my favorite one, Paradise Love, is
I'll see it.
Devastating.
Okay. But if you're listening, also see Paradise Love, but also see Import Export, because that really is one of my. I'll put it up there. That was really good, really, really worth seeing.
You know? Yeah, he's one of my favorites right now.
Mm-hmm.
He might be right now. He's really in a groove.
So those are definitely films that you like.
Yeah.
Any other films out there that fall into that category?
I mean, the cornerstone is City Kid Follies. I mean, that is by far...
Really?
I would say, there's a
top... City Kid Follies.
Top 10.
Or Titty Coo Follies.
It's a mystery, isn't it?
Well, we're going to bring on Frederick Wiseman.
I met him once.
Well, I met him, too. I interviewed him. But not for the podcast.
He spit pate all over my face.
I bet you licked it up and you loved it.
No, I didn't, actually. It was a very humbling experience.
I bet it was. How do you get somebody spitting at you and maintain your admiration and love for their work?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, not too long ago.
What was the one after Crazy Horse, which was about the nudies?
It was the one after, I think, Domestic Violence.
That's many films back.
Yeah, He did
Boxing Gym. He did, in the last few years, Crazy Horse, which is about the French club where the women dance.
I skipped
dance.
That one, yeah.
Well, that's the one I interviewed him on, and I asked him about whether he was aroused at all. Did he get aroused? I confronted him about it.
Oh.
And I'm getting him back on for the new one, which
did
is
Did he put you off?
Well, tried to. Well, let's go to the audio tape.
Okay, now here's the tougher question, because having seen it and coming from an artistic standpoint, when you get down to it, you're still looking at women's bodies. And I tried to approach it from that sort of aesthetic, but I couldn't. I mean, after I'm watching for a while, I was aroused. I mean, I'm becoming aroused because I'm watching at these beautiful bodies that are shot beautifully, and that there's an erotic tension there, which I got carried away with, and... which I wouldn't in ballet, necessarily. And I was wondering, delicacy aside, you're looking through the lens, or and I'm wondering how you're responding
for me, it's also a professional work situation.
I know.
I mean, I enjoyed talking to the dancers, I enjoyed getting to know them a little bit, but I'm very careful about not crossing the line. When you're working... I mean, even though you're seeing beautiful women, I mean, it's not, I'm not appreciating them because I think I do appreciate them. But the important thing is to get the shot. The important thing is not to, and to do it in a way that works.
I completely understand that. And when I ask the question, I completely I understand exactly that that's where you're coming from. I guess what I'm trying to find out is, you're a technician, a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker. You're also an artist, a man. And I'm wondering if at some points when you realize it, because it's a strong film, there's a strong sense of erotic beauty in it, and I'm wondering if at any points, and this is not necessarily about ogling or salivating at all. It's a matter, I think I managed to control those things myself, even though I was alone in a room. But I'm wondering if, if you felt at any point wow, this is actually, it's sexy.
Oh, yeah. No. I found a lot of the women, they're extremely attractive.
Yeah.
Sometimes I found them more attractive in rehearsal than in performance. because in rehearsal they without the makeup and the wigs, they look just like attractive young women, whereas in the performance they're sometimes their individuality was lost. Mm-hmm. So that I personally found them sexier in the rehearsals than in the performance.
Mm-hmm. And did you think about, did you think about what the response to, because I've been saying to a few people that I know, a few friends, like, I don't care if you're a man, woman, gay, straight, you're gonna be very turned on by these images. And it's true, there is some of this what's the word, de-individualizing of them through in the actual performance because of the makeup and they're made to look kind of like part of something, like a troupe, part of one sort of thing.
Right. Right.
As well as the fact that they're made up, but still in all, I think it's the show is rather, like I said, sexy.
Yeah, right, it is. And I hope, people respond that way.
Yeah. So you're sort of ready for those kinds of responses, or have already been, maybe. But
I'm ready. I think there's going to be a full range of responses. I mean, not just that the show is sexy. I think there'll be some people who are very upset by the movie. But I mean, that's life.
Very well said. And then, do you think it would be any different than those that the way people responded to, like, Titty Cut Follies?
No, I don't know. A lot of people were very upset by Titty Cut Follies, and there were some people were upset by the scenes of the naked men in Titty Cut Follies. But that was particularly odd because they weren't upset that human beings were kept in that condition.
Sure.
But they were upset that it was shown.
Right.
Which was, I found, a bit hypocritical.
Yeah.
But again, the whole issue of nakedness, or the distinction between nakedness and nudity, which is sometimes escapes me, is odd because there's no surprise for anybody in seeing a naked body.
Right. Only in that maybe between the two films...
What's the difference in the naked body? A dried-up old man in Bridgewater presumably doesn't have the same kind of sexual interest as a beautiful blonde 25-year-old, unless you're really perverse.
Right. as I think probably is a good description of those people that were so offended, it's more, I think, of a perverse mind to find that objectionable, because, in other words, what's your problem? As you said, why aren't we focusing on the way these human beings are being treated?
He was in this locker, in the locker rooms, in the changing rooms, and also shooting them dancing, naked. And I said, well, you're still a guy. Did you respond to that? Did you ever think, oh my God, what was your response to it? And at first, he goes, I'm very professional, and I don't get it. I'm like, okay, I get it, but like. You're a guy, and there are these beautiful young women dancing, and they're taking their clothes off, and you had to, have some response to that. And he sort of did. He came clean a little bit, yeah.
Well, it depends on the process. If you're shooting,
I know you can.
You're really concentrating on trying to get a good shot and whatever.
Yeah.
If you're I'm curious, because he has an interesting, obviously, relationship with his cinematographers, and they have a specific...
Yes, but at National Gallery, I heard, was very good. It was at the New York Film Festival. It's at the New York Film Festival, and I didn't go to the press screening, but it's going to be at the Film Forum next month, and I'm already hooked up, so we'll be having Frederick Wiseman on the podcast. Well, he did one, the last movie, I can't remember which, it was just came out last year or something, or 2 years ago, and I can't remember what it was, but it was after Crazy Horse.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me personally, he can be hit or miss. I mean, when he hits hard. Like, Domestic Violence. There's a couple movies where...
How many have you seen?
I mean, I've seen, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10. A lot of them forgettable. I remember the missile crisis. There's like an army barracks one. I don't know. They're boring. Like a lot of them like are just... I'm like bad-mouthing Frederick Wiseman, but a little tedious. But then you got Teddy Goodfellow, you got domestic violence that I'll never forget. They're like just permanently imprinted on my mind, especially domestic violence, where...
Because you are...
What?
In your last relationship, you were the victim of that, so...
I was the victim of the movie Domestic Violence, yes.
Yeah,
but seriously, like, are you serious? Oh, okay.
I actually queued it up on my Netflix queue because that and a couple of others.
That is one that is actually
Available
that you should actually project because that's a theatrical experience because Everyone has an opinion, obviously, about domestic violence and why doesn't the girl get up? Blah blah blah. And this movie deconstructs the psychology so deeply. It's so fascinating. By the end of it, it is just your mind is
duly blown,
scrambled eggs. Yeah. I mean, and it's long. It's like a full-on experience. It's like 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I saw that many years ago at the Music Box, and there's a couple like theatrical experiences that you never forget. That's one.
The Music Box is in Chicago.
In Chicago, yeah. I was visiting Carol on tour. And just jumped out to watch that for an afternoon. And it's interesting because it deconstructs the cops mythology. It's just really...
No, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
The thing is there was very few ways you could see a Frederick Wiseman film without buying them.
Well, we used to just steal them from the library and make dubs and then return them back.
Makes sense.
So,
but
high school, I mean...
Right.
Jesus.
But no, but I think just in the last few weeks they released some of them which is great, you know.
For Netflix or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean probably on other platforms.
It's funny
as well,
that he would do that because he's so tight about distribution.
But they did.
But yeah, a couple years ago, I was just living in the Berkshires and did this documentary in Brazil on this ballet competition. And I'm a big fan of Frederick Wiseman, influenced by him. And so I went to Williamstown. He was visiting the prestigious Williamstown to give lectures or something. Mm-hmm. And so, I met him. There was an event for him.
Oh, you met him and he was spitting pate.
Yeah, I was like, I just love your work. I'm a big fan. I'm from Boston, too, and the Boston connection. And here's my documentary. And he basically just looked at me in the eye. I was eating pate, and he's just like, yeah, okay, kid, I'm not going to watch this. And I was like, okay, nice to meet you. Yeah. He's like, you could give it to me, but I'm not going to watch it.
Why would he say that?
I don't know.
I heard, my interaction with him was fine, but not because of, like, anything I did.
I'm sure, it was just, I don't know. I got the lawyer side of his personality, which comes through in his work, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of
meticulousness.
Well, rigid kind of human aspects of his film. They're very kind of, I don't know, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Subjective and hard but cold. This is kind of interplay of being up in someone's face but having a distance too. I don't know. Teddy Follies is like, when you say someone says top 10 or something, it is well and beyond the number one of the top 10. It is like, I think it's by far the best film ever made.
Mm.
And then there's a drop down before you even start a top 10. In my mind, just the history of it, the lawsuit, the film itself.
Today I saw, speaking of venerable documentary filmmakers, I saw the new latest film from Al Maisels.
He's a sweetheart.
Called Iris, which, I think actually might have been could have worked as a short, because it sort of said, like kind of went where it went
Iris?
Yeah, it's about a elderly woman who has been a major force in fashion. She's like a fashion curator, basically. But anyway, she's fascinating, really dynamic, great subject. But the film itself didn't like to go in places after about, you know, 20 minutes in, half hour in. It was like, it didn't really go much further than that. So it's like, you know, it was only 75 minutes. So it wasn't like it was...
I like that length.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was really neat to see him in it. And I think part of the, you know, potential for the film is that Al Maisels is back with this film. And he's you know, it's sort of like making him part of that. And he's, you know, she talks to him just like Little Edie did.
Like who?
Little Edie. Big Edie. Yeah. Little Edie.
Well, what interests me about Albert, yeah, of course, the Grey Gardens, is just his relationship with David and mm-hmm. what that meant when he was gone, because they were such a team. It wasn't Al Maisels becomes to us like Al Maisels, but I mean, right. In cinema, it right. was really...
Yeah, the films since haven't had the impact, in other words.
It's like they had a dynamic together. That was just beautiful, and what the impact mm-hmm. of obviously a loss would be, but the synergy is different in making the film, and he became kind of more of a character nowadays with his cinema. And
yeah, I mean, I don't know that.
I mean, the
he's made anything that's been quite as an impact on the culture since
that era.
No, yeah, no, he hasn't.
I mean, he's an amazing. I mean,
he started off though on his own too, though. You know, before. Right.
Well, I just recently actually saw on Fandor that documentary on the mental institution in Russia, yeah. which is really interesting because it harkens back to that era.
Psychiatry in Russia.
Right, and it's like this era of right before direct cinema of like the voiceover and the explaining and everything. Yeah, and,
yes.
But, I mean, what I love about Al Maisels is, you know, to me, like the director, a lot of times the director of a direct cinema documentary is the cameraman. They're the poet of the documentary, you know, whereas in fiction, the director is considered the poet of the fiction. Mm-hmm. But so that's what makes me interested with Frederick Wiseman, because he's never shot his films, but his films are so about the visual shooting of it.
Mm-hmm. Another film in the festival is this last project that Ed Pincus was involved with. Do you know Ed Pincus? He was the considered the father of the personal documentary. You know, Al Maisels and, you know, D.A. Pennebaker and those, you know, that generation of filmmakers was making verite films, like, you know, right? They were making.
Yeah, give me a title, though.
His most famous work was called Diaries. And basically he just turned the camera on his own life. So he made a movie, he made it about himself. Nobody had done that before. Nobody did that before. Like even those other guys were making films about institutions, you know, whatever it was, right? They were doing, they were doing TV broadcasts, right? Things were TV primary, broadcasts, right? All that politics and have you. And then, you know, Grey Gardens was very groundbreaking. But that was much later. It was like 10 years later, Pincus was turned the camera on himself, rather, and made a movie called Diaries. I have a disc somewhere, not here, but I can lend it to you. But he shot himself, and it was in the, you know, late 60s, and he was, you know, they were part, it was almost like they lived on a cooperative, like, it was like a love, like, you know, farm, and it was a very different period of time. And, you know, they had an open relationship, he and his wife had an open relationship, but, you know, it wasn't, like, still it was a cause of a lot of grief in the marriage. Anyway, it's a really crazy film. I know they were having kids. It was crazy film. Crazy.
Sounds fantastic.
It is fantastic. It's like a 3-hour documentary called Diaries. And he ended up giving up some time later filmmaking, and he and his wife were in Vermont, and they had a flower farm, and they like for many, many years. And then this younger filmmaker named Lucia Small ended up getting him to come out of retirement about 7-8 years, 9-10 years ago after Katrina. And they made a a film called Axe in the Attic. It played at the New York Film Festival to mixed reception. But and then they had a sort of a falling out for a little while, and then they got back together. He found out he was dying, and they made this last film together, and it's called One Cut, One Life, and it's at the New York Film Festival. And I had Lucia on the show. She's been a friend since that last film, Axe in the Attic, came out, because that was, I met her at the film festival that year. And then I emailed with Ed Pincus a couple years ago, seeing if he would come on the podcast, but I didn't know he was in Vermont, and I didn't know he was sick. But I regret that I didn't go up there to Vermont to interview him. Yeah. No, I didn't know, but I wouldn't make that mistake again. But, you know, so anyway, but so we emailed, but he died last November. But it's quite a film. It's not a perfect film, but it's really amazing. Like, it's lovely. I mean, there's a lot of other layers to that film that I haven't brought up, but they're in terms of their dynamic and the wife, Ed's wife, Jane, who's still around.
Well, back to that, you know, that's...
That's another, he's another, like, granddaddy. I mean, he's dead now, but
I mean, that like sounds there. Right up my alley.
Yeah,
like you, that's yeah. I'm about,
well, you should
that.
Definitely see Diaries,
you know, I'm about the heart.
There might be able to see that. I don't know where it's available.
Sounds brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those films are so much richer than the perfect narrative,
right? Oh, I agree. Yeah, the mess in all that mess is, there's so much life in there, right? It's just, it's great. I mean, I agree with you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
nobody's doing that. I mean, he had an influence on a lot of filmmakers, like Ross McElwee, and, you know, even more recently, like a Doug Block, people like that who make films about their own lives. And I mean, definitely, they all pay homage to Ed.
It's
Pincus.
Hard making a film about your own life is devastating.
Yeah,
it takes out a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did you ever see that Brian Wiseman short that he
Brilliant.
Did with his wife? Yeah,
I love it. Love it. Love it.
They almost did not survive that, right?
But it's part of the process, you know. It's part of the process of their relationship, and I go through that not on that at all level, but I have, you know,
you have
as
it.
A filmmaker and being married, it's they have a relationship with filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
so it was kind of. Amazing to watch.
Mm.
And
like, that's why you liked also the Johanna Arnau. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the only thing I like, but I respect that a lot.
Yeah. When I go to the documentaries my favorite documentaries, it's usually down to one moment. It can be even one moment in an entire documentary that makes it, like, for me, that, like, it, where I put it up there, you know, like I remember in Anvil, This Is Anvil, which is kind of like, you know, considered an entertainment as far as documentaries,
but
I actually look at it. There's a moment in there. Have you seen it?
Well, the whole premise is devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, the premise itself is,
it is,
you know, a dream loss that, you know, I deal with that every day. You know, you on a level deal with that, mm-hmm. of just like you get older and, you know, the fruition of your dreams isn't what you thought, and there you are, and now you're older, and do you continue?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you watch that,
I'm even beyond that, though, so it's okay.
Oh, excuse me.
No, I don't mean that. And I mean, I'm just like, yes, I was there, but I've also now gone beyond that, and I'm at, you know, at this other stage.
No, but I mean, no matter what level someone is at, they're going through that in their own mind.
But in Anvil, This Is Anvil, you know, when they finally had this chance to now record, right? To come back together and record a new album.
Right.
And they're, you know, through all their self-sabotage, but they finally get into the studio, and they have a producer that's actually interested in getting them, you know, recording them. And they can't, like, they're up all night and they're freaking out, right? Remember this? And they, like, have a blow up. And what's his name? Rob Reiner. Like, the drummer, isn't that who it is? I might be messing up some of my details, but he, like, storms out. And the guy's like, fuck you, it's over, I don't care. You know, the lead guitar player. But then, like, they get together and they talk it out, and he goes, you know, this is all about you. This is like he starts talking about it. He says, this is all about you and me, and you're my brother. It's so incredible a moment. It's like, it's so honest because it's so true. You know that the fame and that they ever wanted, it was really not about that. It was about, you know, this love and this relationship they had. And it was just like, wow. It was amazing. It was just like incredible, incredible moment in the documentary. And in a kind of like, as it was marketed as a real life Spinal Tap film.
Yeah.
But it didn't do it justice because yes, there's that. But then there's this whole other layer to it where these are human beings, you know, these Jewish guys up in Canada that had a minute, you know, and now they're trying to, yeah, figure it out. Great. So see it if you're listening. Anvil.
No, things that scrape that human wish, that dream, that gets... I just saw this documentary, say, like a couple months ago.
I love that one.
The documentary. Right.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
It's fantastic.
Oh, you just saw Anvil?
No.
No, which one?
The Enforcer.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
It's about a hockey player, and he's from Boston, mm-hmm. and he got a job by just being a goon,
mm-hmm.
you know, a bully on the ice, which is a role in hockey.
Penalties. Right?
Well, no, like, it's interesting. They're enforcers.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that knows hockey is like, who's this jerk off talking about hockey? But
no, they thought that already.
Sure, but now they're thinking it again. But no, it's just a beautiful story. This guy that made a career of just being the bully of the team, which every team would need one to protect the star, the artist of the team, the scorer, per se. Just to get the other team's respect, you need some enforcers. And this guy just, you know, I don't even know if he's drafted or a late mm-hmm. draft, fifth round, got on the team and just had a skill of just fighting. And
mm-hmm.
is, you know, it was just a beautiful documentary about just a blue collar guy just working his way through mm-hmm. life. And
and where do you see it?
Yeah, you can hit that on Netflix.
Okay.
Those kind of stories are...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all my favorite movies, like documentaries like that. They just catch... They can be kind of really flawed, too. Like, you know...
Yeah.
Like you say, Wiseman makes a four-hour film. These are not movies you look at in the same way you look at it as something really edited and into an emotionally arc.
Yeah.
There's no arc. That's not going to happen. You're looking at moments of reality in there that are... You know, where the camera just is on it and it captures it. And
well, he protects himself with the architecture of the institution.
Right, yeah.
So then it's like whatever he does can fit in that.
Yeah.
And
Cobble was doing that too, like for the most part. You know, her movies weren't 4 hours, but she was, I mean, I think it's similar. You would go and you see some of her films and they were also kind of doing the same thing, you know?
What, Harlem USA? That's right.
Well, Harlem, yeah. Being, and then what's the one, American, right after that, she did another one about another union film. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, those early on, she was also doing a very similar thing and capturing real life. And, you know, kind of like Maisel did with Salesman, similar.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and just realizing, oh, it's in the little moments. In
those, MTV just destroyed the documentary form. Well, and gutted it, and now we're living in a kind of confusion of form.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean,
I think there's amazing documentaries coming out all the time.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, yes, yeah. Of course.
But for
I
the mean, popular mainstream, you mean like.
Well, I just mean the whole agenda documentary, where it's like the filmmaker has a point of view before. I really like the purity of just finding the story, and mm-hmm. it's a fearful way. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get in the
No, and you may not have anything, right? Yeah, you may just come out of it with a box.
I mean, it's definitely not, mm-hmm. you know.
It's hard to take those risks now, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, right, reality TV started that way on some level, actually, and then it just started to realize, oh, no, we can actually...
Manipulate
We can actually manipulate, and then that was the end of that.
Yeah.
And all you have is
Which I actually enjoy the cynical reality shows.
I don't know. I have never seen them.
I enjoy them.
No, I'm not judging.
It's the in-between things that get...
No, I can't bring myself to watch anything like... I don't know. I don't even know. Like, there might be... I do know that I had on... When Lucia with One Cut, One Life, she said a friend of hers did this one about 16 and pregnant. And that actually, she was trying to actually insert, the producer of that series was trying to insert messages about, you know, choices and about response, you know, about this whole problem with teenage pregnancy and all that, you know, like sneaking it in.
That one is a gray area for me, because on one hand, that is a real issue, and that is exactly the audience that it could affect around the country. I mean, it's just a fact, so there's many layers to that show, particularly, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't, you know, again, I've never seen, I just don't have cable right now. Well, I do, but I, not here, but I do. But I just don't, I have so little time, I have so many things I need to see that I just don't have time.
It's amazing how many films you watch. It's
what I watch, me or one?
You, I mean, you're like me 10 years ago. I used to watch 3 movies a day, like every day. And
yeah, that's kind of where it's at.
You're insane with movies. I admire it. I can do it right now.
I don't do it every day. I mean, you know, but
yeah. No, I really respect it. When you're when you're programming, when you're looking through films or like dealing with stuff like that, you actually watch the movies, and I respect that so much, because you never know when you're sending an application out to some festival if it's being watched beyond 3 minutes. And I know that you watch the entire movies, whether they're short or long, and that's just respectable.
Well, I think there are more people like that than there are not, but I do know there probably are not. There are also people that are, like you're describing, that are not maybe watching them. I do get in that when I'm screening for some, I mean, you get a pretty awful movie, you know.
It's tough.
You're not... if a film is that flawed, but I always maintain a respect for the filmmaker because I try to, you know, honor that because, as best I can, because, you've made, how many films now? You've made a lot of shorts, but you know how hard that is.
Right. But the thing is nowadays though, that is lacking, I think, is the ability to be looked at again. For instance, Jim Jarmusch's first film, a lot of people have a different opinion about it.
Permanent Vacation.
Is, to me, almost unwatchable. But he was allowed the opportunity to create again and kind of developed into what he is.
Yeah, but many people consider his first film Stranger Than Paradise because...
Well,
that was one that was more
because
realized
they didn't want to acknowledge the actual first feature. My point is that nowadays people aren't given that opportunity. They're just like, oh, here's this guy, this film sucks, and out in the garbage, and you never hear from the guy again. What you're saying is nice to hear, because that's a very rare thing nowadays where you're allowing people to develop into themselves.
Mm-hmm. Which, right, yeah. No, I think that I can usually even see in a very flawed film, but there is something here, and there's somebody trying to do something, and they should be able to give it another shot. There's very few that I've seen that are just so obviously like where this is somebody who's really just obviously picked up some sort of video camera or phone and tried to shot something with, you know, it's so wrong guided, you know, and that they just need to know that this is, you know, or worse, where they actually have a budget because, you know, their gangster uncle gave them a bunch of money and they're literally making it.
Well, that would make it more interesting than it.
It's true, but no, it's really like, and it's, I've seen a few of these too over the years where it's like really, really just like, let's make a local gangster mob film.
Right.
Where, and it's like nobody can act.
Everybody's like seen that.
Yeah. Anyway, those are the worst. So the guest today is...
A nice segue.
Teddy Kalatas. And you have... What can you mention, though, like that's coming up, though, since we are kind of going to put together something out of this? What you've got, Dipso.
Thanks for having me on the show, Adam. I'm really excited.
Well, this is what I wanted to do. But I want to do a series of episodes where we talk about filmmakers, and we kind of do that with Frederick Wiseman, so thank you for doing that. It's like a built-in thing.
Yeah. I mean, I could go, you know, longer on him. He is a turning point, really.
Mm-hmm. When did you learn about Frederick Wiseman?
I started off as a photographer and more painter, and then took some film history classes and transferred to film. But it's narrative has just been a challenge, from an abstract thinking to like a dramatic or theatrical dramatic type experience. And finding Frederick Wiseman was kind of like the last amazing genre I found, where, you know, you devour the Italians and the Germans and the...
like the neorealists.
Yeah, just the French New Wave, you know, Czech New Wave, New German Cinema, you know, noir and classic, and you just kind of, you get psyched on film. And direct cinema was like the last thing that was like, wow, I've never seen that. And Frederick Wiseman opened up that can of worms, and it just stuck with me the deepest.
And Titty Cup Follies was the first one you'd seen?
Yeah, I mean, just...
because that was his first.
Yeah.
Right?
He wasn't even his first filmmaker then. He just made a film.
For those who are listening and actually are sticking with this conversation, God bless you, by the way, and you earned yourself a lifetime membership to the Filmwax Club. But it was a mental institution.
In 1959, Bridgewater, Boston, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, right. In indescribable neglect and...
well, it was really the first...
This was rampant probably in many different institutions around the country, but it was...
the world.
Nobody, but people were thrown into the... you know, people with mental problems.
It was really the last innocence of documentary, where you could... people didn't think that you were making a film. They weren't thinking that people would watch it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, but I was thinking of the people in that living in these institutions were also just sort of, you know, they were not properly
just living in squalor.
Yeah, but they They were never They were never really. What am I trying to say? They were,
well, I mean, it was just all sorts of mental issues mixed together.
Schizophrenics and
some
and,
weren't even mentally ill. They were just had maybe behavioral problems, but then they're mixed in with someone with schizophrenia, and then they're mixed in with someone that's like physically crippled, and then they're mixed in with someone like on Thorazine, and and it was just horrific. Just. It's everything that you would imagine the horrific scenes of the 50s to be, just naked people in their feces and, you know, it wasn't presented objectively. I mean, you're talking about a camera right up in someone's face, subjectively filmed, and that was absolutely shocking at the time. Most documentaries before that were very objective, with a voiceover explaining what you're watching, sanitized, and there's no voiceover. It was just... extreme close-up of just horrific scenes, and it just
with musical numbers, which I did not figure
there,
out.
that's
not true.
Adam's being funny, but there is a musical number in it, and
I didn't have the advantage of seeing that, like, obviously as a early type of thing. I saw that much later and more recently, but I'm glad you brought up Frederick Wiseman though, and
there's two films in my life that I've watched back to back. Like, I watched it.
You started right over when you finished
started
it?
Right over. And Titty Cut Follies is
Mary
one.
Mary Poppins.
And the Let other was Mary High Poppins. School.
Oh, both Wiseman films?
And the third was Mary Poppins.
Really?
Yes.
But, you know, it makes sense almost because you're watching. It's so huge a film. So much.
It's just
so much going
present.
On.
I mean, it could be happening now, then, timeless. Because you're looking at class, you're looking at character. You're not. It's not even a time capsule, even though it is.
Yeah.
Even high school, it's about a very specific school. It's not, you know, it's not the average school. I mean, it's a very specific school, but that doesn't even matter. It's about the characters in the play. It almost becomes a play. Of character and class in high school. And yes, a lot of those characters are directly from the 50s, and then that becomes interesting, and then you see the clashes of it's just, I love it.
The thing about him is he also operated, he was just on his own.
I want to interview his cameraman.
Because but he wasn't in New York. I mean, he wasn't.
No,
like,
he was a Boston lawyer.
Yeah. But the thing is like, you know, here in New York, even. There was a kind of a culture where, you know, with these filmmakers, and they supported, you know, even though they were all like operating outside the mainstream, they, you know, initially anyway.
It drew associates.
Mm-hmm.
With Primary.
And Maisels are from the, right. from Boston, but they came here.
No, no, Al Maisels was a cinematographer on Primary.
Right.
And
Pennebaker was on that. And
Penny
Bob
Baker,
Drew.
Right.
And
Drew Associates. And they were
Leacock.
Right.
Leacock, rather.
I mean, even that I'm fascinated with. I'm fascinated of like the lore of Primary and all the talent that came out of that film.
When's the Videology screening?
It is October 20th at 9:30. And I'm also showing a short film called Cole.
Cole.
Cole, yes.
Okay.
It's David Rosenfeld's short film.
Okay, very good.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's excellent. It's an amazing short.
Will David be at the screening as well?
He will, yeah.
Okay. Dipso is at Videology on October 20th. Go to videology.com. Find out more details. Do you have a website?
I do.
With this kind of stuff?
Brokenhorsefilms.org.
Brokenhorsefilms.org. Dot. Org.
Actually, Dipso, there's some Frederick Wiseman in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very documentary style, no doubt. I mean, you can see the influence there. And I'll be doing the Q&A. Yeah. I mean, if you don't live in New York, you can watch it on Fandor. And the name of the film is Dipso, and I can tell you firsthand it's a terrific film. Yeah.
Well, what did you feel about the film? I'm curious.
Dipso?
Yeah. It seemed to affect you.
It's did it affect it? No, I mean, of course I enjoyed it because it's like it is documentary style in the sense that there's no way to know how this thing is going to work out. There's no typical structure to the film. It was very like verite in a way, you know, and it's refreshing. But more importantly, you know, the main character is very strong. Matthew?
Yeah, Matt Shaw.
Matt Shaw. Very strong character.
Tom Collins in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like that
no,
about
but
documentary,
very strong
though.
Films. I mean, very strong characters. And, you know, it's like, the hell are we looking at here? But there's a big segment towards, let's say, the third chapter or the last chapter where they break into a, right?
Yeah.
Where they break into a house and get drunk on the booze and fall asleep. I mean, I don't want to give away, but it's almost not really about giving it away because it's just part of the story.
It just is. Them.
Yeah, it's not really, it's not a spoiler in that way. But there's all these scenes like that and his relationship with his brother and his attempts to do stand-up. He's a very real guy and we can relate to him. You know, he's really like a... you feel compassion for him and at the same time, this is not a professional actor.
Right.
You know, and you are almost thinking this is as close to thinking like, oh, is this really, or what, is this is he acting or is this for real? What is, so it's nice. It's, I like not knowing the line being blurred. It's good.
Well, speaking of documentary, I mean, just what I love about direct cinema and Frederick Wiseman and these filmmakers is that it is not about plot. It's like you are in the moment directly, and it almost doesn't matter what's going to happen. You have no idea what is going to happen.
Right.
And that's a great place to be.
And you can't rely on some sort of arc or character arc. It's just what it is. You're gonna. Did you see Strongman?
Yeah, that's a great film, too.
Yeah, I'm sure you liked it.
Yeah.
For that same reason, Zachary Levy's film, you know, my first guest ever.
Right. I like that space, though, of not knowing what's going to happen and not caring.
Right. No, because not only because for its in of itself and that, you know, just but just because so much cinema tells you what's going to happen. You know, it's so formalized. It's so rather, you know, predictable and it's just also, you know.
I like scaring people, like being just riding right up to the line and kind of crossing the line of, you know, the three-dimensionality of it. And like at the end, when they're in the house, just the extremity of the moment, the kind of final scene.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it's great too that you feel that way about your film, you know? To talk to you about your film that way too, is it's great that you feel that way about it and you're proud of it, I can tell.
Yeah. No,
finally, you can express it without apologizing.
Well, it was devastating to make. It just about broke me.
Yeah.
Personally.
No, this was the one you really feel like you... I do think it had that capacity. And I think, you know, Fandor, the folks at Fandor recognize that.
Thank God. I mean, it's a hard film to swallow, and people mm-hmm. either love it or they don't know what it is, because mm-hmm. it represents a segment of society that isn't looked at kind of in that way, and the way that people speak and talk to each other. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a big deal to me, but I've been in many theaters where people are just offended by the language.
Yeah, to hell with them.
Right.
They need to evolve.
But yeah, it was devastating to make, though.
Well, you know.
I mean, I also don't feel like I was almost I was a filmmaker, but I mean, I just made this alone, you know. It was the time period between coming to New York and meeting people like you and other people from when I made that film mm-hmm. is light years. I mean, just living in the middle of the nowhere, bartending, making a film that I didn't think anyone would see, let alone be talking to you about, it's kind of bizarre.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you are listening and you can actually see it on Fandor, and you can get a free 2-week trial subscription to Fandor and watch as many films as you want during that period of time. And then you can include Dipso.
Fandor is fantastic.
I agree.
I mean, Fandor has kind of reinvigorated me. Their catalog is just...
There's a lot of great films in there.
Yeah. It's kind of gotten me back to watching films.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had, like, all the time just to... Because there's so many weird, unique films in there.
It's just up late at night.
You could just watch, like, so much stuff. Like all these, like, really underground films that are... Doesn't mean they're not commercial either. They're not commercial in that fact that maybe nobody knows they exist, but it doesn't mean they're not commercial in their structure or in their... You know, what have you.
I've been randomly
watching
Jay Rosenblatt, which... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's very experimental.
Experimental, but so accessible and gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, he was on the show.
Yeah, no, I know.
Okay.
But...
Yeah, and he right, they're all found footage, like industrials
great.
And, you know, what have you. Right? Using footage from industrial films and like, foam movies.
But things like that you just can't just... I don't know.
Yeah, there's something very emotional. You know, like, very emotional about those movies.
As a counterpoint to my reality television habits.
Everybody needs to blow off steam. Decompress. Sometimes I do need to put on I feel like just like empty TV. But right now I don't have it.
Yeah, no, it's addictive too. It's a drug.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to First Take these days.
I don't know what that means, but...
Stephen A. Smith? No? Doesn't ring a bell?
No.
It's a pretty big character.
Mm-hmm.
Chip Bayless. They're sports commentators, but they just veer off into race and all these issues with mm-hmm. sports.
Oh, okay.
It's
fascinating,
actually.
I watch stuff on HBO, because I have HBO Go. So I can watch, like...
I'm just talking about trash TV.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it sounds a little bit deeper than that, but...
It's hard to respect football right now.
Yeah. Well, it's so many problems on so many different levels in terms of inflated, salaries. And then you have the whole game, like physically what it does
right.
to football
yeah.
to athletes, like and how it's like the concussions. And
that was an amazing documentary.
I watch a lot of those 30 for 30
is great.
I know, it's a great series.
There was a beautiful one, Marcus Dupree. Have mm-hmm. you seen that one?
I'm not sure which
one. Same kind of story I love. One of the greatest ever all-time running backs in college. Mm-hmm. Just...
Oh, yeah.
By far. Got to the NFL, you know, first pick, everything, mm-hmm. and just fucked his knee.
Yeah.
Game or something like that. First three games,
mm-hmm.
and just
his career was over.
Just done. I mean, kind of came back.
Yeah, No, and there are a lot of those stories.
Just sad, just devastating. But then redemptive at the end.
Yeah. The last film before the Safdie brothers. They're a documentary on the football player too. It was a basketball player. It was at Tribeca last year. Similar type of thing. But I like sports docs. I do. All right. Look, this was great.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming
on. This was
fun.
I hope I was interested.
You are editing this one.
I'll edit the shit out of this.
You should edit this show. Teddy Kalatas, my dear, dear friend.
My dear God.
My dear God. No, my dear friend, Teddy Kalatas, thank you, and we'll do this again soon. Thank you for listening. Facebook.com/FilmWaxRadio. Twitter @FilmWaxRadio. You can reach me by email. Just send an email out into the email world. Send an email to me at adam@FilmWax.com. What else? You can go to FilmWaxRadio.com, the website, and get all your FilmWax Radio needs. You can go to the About page and suggest a guest. There's a place to do that. Most important of all, though, are you already subscribing? That would be my of course, big question. And you can go to iTunes and take care of that for me right now. Thank you very kindly. I need subscribers, and, you know, it's much appreciated. And you can leave a comment, but absolutely subscribe and absolutely put a star rating, whatever you think is appropriate, between 4 and 5 stars. Thanks. That's very nice of you. Seriously. What else is going on here? Not a ton. I'm getting myself ready to go to Woodstock for a couple of days. I'm going to go check out this festival I have never been to before, but I've been wanting to go for the last, 7 years. And they're now in their 15th season, and they've got a bunch of great films. And in fact, one of the films is a documentary by Pauly Shore about a tour that he did, a brief comedy tour in the Midwest. And, you know, it's sort of Pauly in his, is it a downward trajectory? Maybe that's a little strong. Maybe it's just like he's already seen his heyday in some respects, but now he's trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do with my next part of my life? What am I going to do with it? Am I going to have a family? Am I going to have a serious relationship? How do I fit it into this world that I grew up that has no place for intimacy, no place for longevity when it comes to relationships and commitment and all that? So it's a really, really interesting thing, because this is somebody who we've seen from a bunch of goofy movies, like him or not, but they are goofy, and now we're seeing a guy who has to reckon with a lot of choices that he's made over the last 20, 30 years, right? So this is it's called Pauly Shore, and I'm just mentioning it now. There's a lot of other great guests coming up, but I just happened to have watched that documentary, and tomorrow I'm interviewing Pauly Shore. So he'll be on the show coming up soon. You know, it's Pauly and then Volker Schlondorf. Do you know who Volker Schlondorf is? Look it up. He's coming on the show. Thank you for listening, everybody. I love you. I appreciate your just even taking 10 minutes out of your busy day to listen to this show, let alone however long the shows are. Thank you. Thank you. Do you have a show? I'll listen to your show. I should be listening to your show. Screw my show. We'll be back, though, in a couple of days with Larry Fessenden also for our Shocktober episode. That's going to come up a little later this week. Larry Fessenden. If you don't know Larry's work, by golly, check him out. God bless you. This is Adam Chartoff. You're listening to Film Wax Radio, episode number 247, presented by Rooftop Films. Until next time, be well.
pushed the long black robe to the darkened sky.